So it gives me great pleasure to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Terry C.
I'm Terry. I'm an alcoholic. Thank you for your share and for coming and agreeing to participate. I hear you, Brendan, when you share, and I hear the right stuff. Service is it's been a big part of my, I believe, why I'm still here. You know, I hear that in the step study. You promote that step study, and I used to attend those regular when I was new, and my sobriety date is March 17th of 92. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1982. The court sent me here, and I needed Alcoholics Anonymous desperately. I needed to help. I was in a lot of trouble with the courts, and they sent me to a bunch of different places. And my first meeting was in Ventura, on Grand Avenue. I was kind of drunk driving. I was really intoxicated, and I was over in, I'm pretty sure it was Linwood, but then it could have been Compton. I don't know. I don't know. I know that the sheriffs, they were, the blue lights came on, and you know when you're drunk, you're not thinking right?
Yeah, really?
So, I'm not pulling over. My thinking was, hold on. I'm going to get it together, and they'll leave. You know? And I kept going. And, you know, you're driving with one eye, both hands, and there's a cop comes this over here, and he's like, and I'm like, nuh-uh. No. Hold on. I'm like, hold on. And then there was a whole bunch of them. There's a whole bunch of them. So I finally pulled over, because this is not working for me. So I pulled over, and they yanked me out of the car, and they were pissed. Why didn't you? And they were yelling, and so they took me over to the, I ended up at the Civil Brand. That's a jail in LA for the women, and you know, they kept me there. My uncle was trying to find me, and he couldn't find me. I was over there, and so finally when they did, the father of my kids, I had a 6-month-old and a year and a half. My daughter was a year and a half, and he showed up with the kids and scolded me, and how could you, and just a lot of shaming, and you know, it was bad. You know, I woke up that morning, I dropped the kids off with my aunt, and I took off. And I'd already been drinking in the morning. I was already drinking in the morning, and so the courts, I blew out 0.26, and they sent me to the SB 38, second level. And so I got home, and I just, you know, them bright ideas, and I'm like, he's my problem. I'm the fuck out of here. He is my problem. I don't like him. I called my dad. Come and get me. My dad was there that weekend. With the truck, drunk. So then we pulled all the stuff, put it all in the in the truck, and I was gone. And I was back in Oxnard. And that's how I ended up at an AA meeting in Ventura. I went back home. I lived in Bell Gardens, you know. And so I ended up at the meeting. I ended up at one of those appointments for probation. And some other alcohol school and some alcohol school and so it was, you know, I tried to do the deal but when I drink, I don't do nothing. I don't show up nowhere, and you got to come and get me. You got to come and get me. I don't show up to anything good, and you got to come and get me. So for the next 10 years, I was in and out of the jail. Every time they'd find me, I'd have a warrant out. So they took my license, and so I didn't have a license for the whole time, you know. Got a hold of the cocaine, and I noticed I could stay up. I wasn't falling down. When I'm just only drinking, I am a mess. I wreck cars, I get into fights, I'm thrown out of bars. I am just terrible. Terrible. Bloodied. And my mouth keeps going. I don't care. I just don't give a shit. And then I got a hold of that cocaine. I stay up for days. You know, and then after a while, you know, 5 days, I mean, come on, we gotta lay down so you get hold of the benzos. So you can lay down. Mm-hmm. And the last 2 years that I was out there, I got a hold of heroin. I ended up in jail. One of my neighbors, she goes, "Oh, I live over there. Oh, you're my neighbor." Well, she was a heroin addict. So I ended up hanging out with her, and I got a hold of that for a couple of years. And, I ended up calling my brother. He had come to the rooms, and he through juvenile detention, and I heard that he was clean and he was doing well. And I called him and I asked him, you know, I need help. I can't do this anymore. And he says, I'll come right now. And I'm like, right now? I'm like, come, you know, at the end of, you know how right now is never good? Right now is never good. And so I'm like, come at the end of summer, and the kids will go, you know, finish off school, and then I'll go with you, you know? When the summer started to come, in June, my other brother showed up, and it turned out that he was going to Oxnard, and I had heard that he was going to end up coming by to see me. He was already over here in Santa Maria, and my older brother showed up, and I guess he had ended up at a party where there was drinking, and he was shot. And so we lost my brother that night, and my oldest brother, you know, I'm like, what can we do? He says, there's nothing to do. And that feeling is such an ugly feeling. You know, my brother was killed. His friend was shot in the head, and he was killed too. And there was another one that was creased in it. It was a party. It was a party, and it was a crazy party. You know, so, you know, not only, you know, using, but that lifestyle is dangerous. You know, I can't, for me, I don't kick it with Louie and Chewy over at the Motel Limon. I don't do that either, because where I go is, I have to be careful where I go and the environment I'm in. You know, I don't hang out in bars. I don't have any reason to kick it in bars. I don't hang around where there's paraphernalia. There's no excuse for me to be in those environments. I don't mess with that. I got to the rooms. My grandmother ended up picking me up, and she showed up, and she goes, "We're going to Santa Maria," and I'm like, "Not right now." I said, take the kids and I'll be there on Saturday. She said, I heard about your Saturdays. She says, they never get here. She says, we're leaving. And she put me in the car and she brought me to Santa Maria. You know, my mom had moved here, her job had moved here, and she worked for Frozen Foods, and my dad was here. And the next day, I seen my dad, and he had this really nice haircut and slacks and shiny shoes. And the time prior that I had seen him, he was living on Skid Row. Skid Row, and he had purple and green hair, and it was chopped up in different lengths, like choppy, choppy. And he smelled so bad, I just didn't want him around me. And so when I came to that evening and I saw my dad and what you guys had done to him, you know, he was a counselor over at Good Samaritan Shelter. I seen him and I was like, wow, he looked like an angel to me compared to the person that I had known that was living on Skid Row and with the purple and green hair. I said, what the fuck happened to you? He says, so and so and so and so. I said, well, who's that? He says, the hookers. I'm like, what the hell? The hookers had got a hold of his hair and chopped it up and made him kind of like a funky look. Anyway, so when I saw him, he was all cleaned up. And then so he was sitting at the kitchen table. My story can be crazy. I'm trying to clean it up and not cuss too much. Because I'll get fucking out. There you was. You know, my dad was a drug dealer. You know, my father, my biological father is a murderer. My stepfather is a criminal, drug dealing asshole. My stepmom was on crosstops and she was crazy. We had the cleanest house on the block though. The fucker was clean. Spiffy looking. And there was 8 of us. There's 5 of us boys, and eventually we all sold dope. You know, it was a fucked up place, and we were all crazy on cocaine. You know, my dad's motto was, you know, you can do some cocaine, but stay away from the heroin. You know, you can do this, you can do beers, but stay away from the alcohol. You know, I was 15 years old. He had his stomach burst, so they had to do exploratory surgery, and he was laying there. And my mom's like, I'm telling my mom, I want to go with my friends. She goes, well, go ask your dad. He says, okay, go. And then so I went back to her. He said, go. Well, what time? I don't know. Go back to him. And then he just goes, whatever time you want to come, yeah. And so I had to put up with her shit, so called. And so he looks at me, he says, just don't do nothing that I wouldn't do, ha, ha, ha. And he's drinking a beer with a colostomy bag where his stomach had just imploded. It's like, I'm not gonna do a goddamn thing you do. But there I go. I ended up driving the damn car, delivering the cocaine, the dope dealer. So anyway, so when we get over here and he's all cleaned up, you know, this son of a bitch from hell looks like an angel. I'm like, he goes, do you want to go visit my job? I said, okay. All right. I weighed 114 pounds when I got to Santa Maria. That does not look good. I'm 5'7". I was ready for the, you know, for the, what do you call it? Body bag? And so he took me over. I didn't even know where he worked. He took me over and he introduced me to Pat Brown, Pat. And she started doing an intake and she goes, well, we have a place here and you can stay here and we can watch you. And do you want a different life? And I said, sure. And she started asking me all the intake. And so she handed me over to detox and I stayed there for 2 weeks. And you know, I slept, and then, you know, after when the end started to come, I started getting nervous, and I started to get scared. I told the detox attendant, I said, I'm probably going to end up drinking. And he says, no, you're here to stop. And back then, they didn't bring us to meetings. What they did is they put acupuncture in our ears and in our feet, and we used to have, you have to stand still or else it hurt a lot. You know, you had pins all over the place. So So I told him, I says, I'm probably going to end up, you know, drinking. And he says, no, you're here to, you know, to make a change. So he goes, go over to that little house. Back then it was on Orange Street. He says, go over to that little house, go two blocks that way and a block that way, and you, and go into that little house, and they'll help you. So I walked right here. I walked into to this little room, and I sat right there, and it was at an evening meeting. And I came over here, and I talked to my dad, and Pat came over. She goes, we're going to keep you another week. And I said, shh, you know what I mean? Like, just keep me forever, because I'm a problem. I'm a real problem. And so she kept me another week, and I talked to my dad, and he goes, don't worry about it, mija, we got you covered. And they took care of the kids. My kids were, you know, my kids were 10 and 12. And so I came to the meetings. I started coming to the meetings, and I did relapse. And I have to say, I did relapse. And the girls that were reaching out, they brought me to meetings. They invited me to meetings, and I started coming to meetings. You know, the last time I relapsed, I left a meeting, and I had 20 days. I left the meeting, I went out there, and I wanted to talk because I started feeling really, really uneasy. And I did go up, and that night I was supposed to go to a meeting with one of the girls in my car. I said, don't come over, I'm drinking. She said, I want to thank you for telling me. She didn't let me sit at home. She asked me to come back, and I did, you know, I did. You know, my 10-year-old and my 12-year-old, you know, my daughter's, you know, I'm a grandmother now. I have a 12-year-old and an 11-year-old grandson. They call me Nana. And my daughter, she'll be 40 soon. And I have my son, you know. I raised them by myself with the help of Alcoholics Anonymous. Sponsorship isn't only... You know, you want to say, well, it's only for the steps. Well, the steps encompass everything. You know, I needed help with those kids. You know, I needed help raising those kids. You know, you can't put a 10 and 12-year-old that was raised by a crack mom in timeout. I had to put me in timeout. I put my... My kids were street smart. Time out. What the fuck are you talking about? You know what I mean? I had to put myself in time out, figure it out, and come back with something that was, you know, work with, you know? And as a result of that, you know, I have beautiful kids. You know, my son graduated from high school and you know, he took off to college. And while we were here, you know, I it was a package deal for me. All three of us were in recovery. You know, for me it was, you know, I need to come in here and do the things that normal moms do, you know. I was everywhere. I was basketball, baseball, football, cheerleading, the fundraisers. You guys eat a lot of candy. I know I sold a bunch of chocolate bars at meetings when my son was... And he would get all excited. He goes, you sold another box? I come back and get more. I go, give me two more boxes. So I come to meetings, and you guys bought a lot of chocolates. You guys eat a lot of chocolate. Anyway, he got to do the football thing, the dirt, you know. I took them to church. I took them to Bible study, and I wanted them to have an understanding of God of their own. You know, and I took them and they liked it. I was so happy about that. They liked it. I would take them and drop them off. And you know, I can ask them, do you pray? And they say, yeah. They say, yeah. You know, it was important to me that my kids not experience anymore, you know. As crazy as my childhood was, my kids were not taken away. They were with me the whole time. And there's a lot of violence, a lot of chaos. They got me, they watched me being taken away several times. So it's important that they not experience that anymore. They not witness that. And that I You know, my sponsor said, you know, every night when you're cooking dinner, you're making that difference, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that I could do. You know, when you get here with a son and a daughter and you're single, the budget's small. So there's, you make what you can and you do what you can with what you have. So you come out and you make it work, you know. We were a team. I didn't have a license when I got here. I hadn't had one in 10 years, and so I got these checks coming, from child support maybe, or maybe it was back taxes. I didn't even know I could get taxes. I didn't know nothing about none of that crap. Anyway, so I got this little bit of money. I thought, I'm gonna give me a little car. So I went and Ted. He calls it ERV, Early Recovery Vehicle. I went and I decided I was going to give me an ERV, Early Recovery Vehicle. I loved it. I miss him. So I went. I got my little cash, and I went and I started looking for my little ERV, and so I found this little opening, and it was a blue little Chevy, a little hatch. I love hatches. I've always driven a hatch. Anyway, so I got that little car and I started driving like it's nobody's business. And so a couple of weeks after I get the car, I call my sponsor and I tell her I got a car. She goes, "You did?" I go, "Yeah." She goes, "Do you have a license?" I'm like, "License?" I'm like, "No. No." She goes, "Do you have insurance?" I'm like, my dad says, "Why the hell do you need insurance if you ain't got no damn license?" I'm like, "Don't ask no more stupid questions." That's what you know. See, you should have called this bitch. You should have never called her. Anyway, God put the right people in my life, I said. I was pissed. I'd walk by my car going to meetings and I'd be right back. I'm like, "Drive it, she won't know." And I'm walking by the car and so she goes, "We're going to Ventura." I'm like, "You don't understand. I don't have shit coming. I've been misbehaving for 10 years. They're gonna laugh. I have nothing coming. I have not done nothing they've said but run. And when they arrest me, I go with them." And she goes, "We're gonna get on calendar. We're gonna go take care of this." Suzanne Meyer, redhead. And she goes, "No." So she pulls up to the house. Got to put a date together. Pulls up to the house. Puts me in the car. I said, "You don't understand. They're going to tell me to get the hell out of here and don't come back." She goes, "No, we'll get on calendar." So we go and we get on calendar. And I try to give her money for gas. She didn't want to take it either. And she goes, "We got on calendar." And the judge seen the letters and I told him what I've been doing. I was over here. He goes, "Okay, do these three little things and you can have it." I looked over at her. She had this big giant grin. I'm like, how the hell did she know? How did she know? You know what I mean? How did she know? And so I did those little things and then I went back to driving my hoopty. Yeah, my little car. The kids were so happy. Yeah, and since it, and you know, she showed me that you show up. Don't doubt God. And even then, you know, I had restitution. You know how you save the baby shoes, you save pictures, you save the little deals from the kindergarten where the kids go to school and they come back with the little images, you save all that stuff. I have the stuff that I have from recovery. From when they were 10 and 12. I have that stuff. And I have my probation receipts in there. I have where I decided to... I faithfully was able to do it. You know why? Because I had a clean date. I gave those payments because I have a clean date. I showed up to these places because I have a clean date. And I have a clean date because you guys supported me. You guys gave me a place to go. You supported me at every turn. You told me it was going to be okay when I wanted to give, you know, when I was afraid. You made me show up. And I trusted you before I trusted God. Because I didn't think that I was going to have anything coming. My mind tells me that I have nothing coming. I've destroyed so much, and I owe. And God says, you deserve a lot better. Show up, make your amends, clean up your mess. Clean up your mess. Clean up your mess. What does it say? Tell the truth and shame the devil. Get the hell out of here. You know? So what I did is, at 6 months, I was asked to secretary a meeting. And I was sure you guys didn't know what the heck, but you guys assured me that I would do okay. So I secretaried the Thursday night meeting here in this building. And I started to do that, and at every turn I got the help I needed. And from then on I've been of service. My home group is the Valley Group, Santa Maria Valley Group, because that's where I ended up. I used to come over here and I used to sit right here. Santa Maria Valley Group is my home group. Since then I've been of service to all the groups, well, the Golden Group, the Survivors, Santa Maria Valley Group, and to the Happy Hour, you know. Terry Shaw, he brought this. He used to come here and visit. Finally, he moved here. And he says, Terry, he says, how come you don't have a happy hour? I'm like, well, isn't that where you drink? He goes. No, it's a meeting that goes on at the same time that they're drinking. You know, when people get off work. I say, well, what do you think? And he would always ask, how come you don't have? You know, he didn't call Central Office. He called it something else. I guess it's called something else where he was from. He goes, how come you don't have one of those? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Let me ask Carl. So I would call Carl Bynum, one of the elders that was here. I was always calling Carl. And Carl says, well, this, and I said, and I told Terry, I says, well, why don't you go talk to the 1600 Club board? And so he did. And he says, well, they want this much, and we're going to do Friday, you know, Monday through Friday. And I said, okay, they want this much. I said, all right, pick a day. And he did. And he called me. He says, it was on a Wednesday. He goes, I'll see you tomorrow. And we sat right there. It was like three or four of us, and me and him, and I could have sat with him, just me and him. I liked Terry. He was my buddy. He used to come and visit us, and he would always hand out the AA CDs. He would always send out. He would always ask at every meeting, if you can't read, if you would rather have it like this, I have it, and it's free. And then when he found out that you didn't have anything to play it on, he would give you that too, so you can listen to the big book. And he did that every time. And one day I was at home at my mom's house, and I didn't know, you know, when I was 16, I left the house when I was 16 and a half. So, you know, I was second to the oldest. So what happened to the younger kids, I wasn't aware of. I just know later on we all were on drugs, except for the only one that doesn't do anything is my sister Donna. And sometimes I think she better drink a beer because she is, like, really mean. Anyway, so they were all younger, and so I didn't know a bunch of what was going on at the house. But one of the boys, he ended up in the rooms, and he had trouble reading, comprehending. And Terry gave him the book. And when I heard he had done that, and how much it helped my brother, I would just forever be grateful to him. You know, whatever Terry would have asked me to do, I would have done it. I would have sat with him here by myself if that's what he needed. So, and then slowly but surely people joined us, and now, you know, he left us a legacy. You know, he started the happy hour, and then he was really attentive on, and Billy's here, He was part of the central office. Very much, he was concerned. He, you know, because I know that he we would have our meetings here, and the overflow he would take it. He goes, I go, but we're gonna have to start taking a group conscience at some point. He goes, okay. He was so funny. So cute. And you know, he came to meetings until he couldn't come to meetings anymore. Then they took meetings to his home. But you know, service is where it's at. Service has been where you know, you stay busy, you stay active, and life is good. Life is good. You know, I just took a trip. My my daughter, August, she'll be married 16 years. I'm like, what the hell? Nobody does nothing for 16 years. But she's married. I'm like... Anyway, her husband is a sailor. He's a sailor, and he is beautiful. I have beautiful grandkids. I have a 12-year-old and a 10-year-old, and they're very well behaved. He's stationed in North Carolina, which is going willing to go to any lengths. As far as I'm concerned, I don't like it. It's humid, it's hot, it's a bunch of crap. I'm pissed. But anyway, I flew out and met them in D.C. I got to see D.C. and everything in that town, and then went over to Jersey and New York. Got to see New York, Jersey, Virginia, Maryland, Philadelphia. I was out for a week. I got to see, you know, I went to Ellis Island. That was significant, my trip. Ellis Island, all the museums, you know, the cemetery. A lot of history in that area. I love it. And I'm going to go back and see more. You can be there a whole month and not see it all. There's so much history in that area. I went and, you know, a crackhead like me doesn't get to do that kind of stuff. I don't do nothing if I'm not clean. And you guys gave me that. No. So, you know, the thought of my grandchildren seeing me the way I was just... No. You know, I weighed 114 pounds when I got here, and I was done. I was done. And, when you come here and you know, I came here and I was used to, you know, Mexicans and black people. I come here and I'm trying to buy all these white people. And I'm like, I'm like out of my element. You know what I mean? I'm like out of my element. And so I would sit over here and be real shy and like, you know, I was on the streets. And all this row right here was elders, and they all reached out to me, and they would all give me hugs and call me little Terry. And they eventually started sponsoring me, you know. And when I got here and I had no people skills, I had nothing of value that you could put on an employment application or a rental agreement or anything of value. I'd been evicted from everywhere I'd gone for the last 10 years. Due to violence, traffic, drugs, just horrible things. And I came here and I prayed. When I got out of detox, my mom's neighbor took me to go see a place. And I'm not kidding. I go, oh, look at this place. It's so nice. It was Ralph. His name was Ralph. He goes, well, I bet you Jessica, I was telling Mickey, I bet you Jessica would, and Pody would love it. He goes, well, you can have it. I'm like, but you haven't even seen the agreement, you know, I haven't even filled out. He goes, do you want it or not? And so I ended up moving right here, down the street. How the hell? So I used to walk over here. I used to walk over here to meetings I lost my train of thought. I used to walk over here. And then Angel used to hitchhike. So that son of a... He used to stop by the house and come, and we would come to meetings. That's one thing. There's some of us with a lot of time. And we've been coming here forever. 25 years. You know, I have 27 years sober. Who would have thought? I've gained like 70 pounds. Anyway, I'm just really thankful that Alcoholics Anonymous, okay, and I need to mention, I do the other fellowship, and I spent most of my first 10 years, I spent it in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then I started getting, like, complacent in my thinking, so I ended up over at the Survivors, and I secretaried my first meeting at 10 years, and I started addressing some other stuff, you know, and I started bringing that up because I don't need to get complacent about nothing. My life is over when I pick up. I don't need to get complacent or comfortable with thinking that I don't belong here or I don't belong anywhere, that I'm better off in the street. I can't entertain that kind of thought, and I don't fuck around with that stuff. So what I did is I went to Narcotics Anonymous, got a commitment there, and started talking. One of the guys had just went out. He had 12 years. So what I do is I go drive. I lived over here. I drive all the way to Orchid, put him in my car, and bring his ass over here and say, okay, now what happened? Tell me about what happened. And it was exactly where I was at. And I would bring him to meetings. His name was Tom. And so he got a clean date, and we would come to meetings, and I would go pick him up. I love Tom. He ended up with the Hep C and passed away. But I'll tell you what, I am willing to go to any lengths to stick around and not allow my rotten thinking to take me out. And as a result of that, you know, there was a lot of, you know, we lost our Alano Club in this area. You know, the Survivors moved. So I started an NA group. You know, I started the STM. You know, I got my just for today, and I got a piece of paper, and I'm like, all right. So, and I sat there in that little room, and before you knew it, there was all kinds of addicts. And now there's a group, and they meet like 18, 20 times a week. I started that. And it's not that I started it. It's just that I was there with my just for today. And God did the rest. When there's a need, boom. Boom. And I'm not afraid to do those things. And there was a lot of controversy. But, hey, I don't know. I'm for service. I'm for doing the next thing that's indicated. And I'm not, you know, I'm not any better than. I believe what you hear in meetings, there's no little shots or big shots. Because one shot and we're all shot. And we're all the fuck out of here. And that's not why we're here. I love you guys. And I'm going to keep coming back. And whatever I can do. You know, I don't have a commitment right now. I moved to Arroyo Grande. And I was going over there to meetings over there. But no. I don't want to. I want to come here. You know, I'm going over to Nelson. They have elders. How lucky is that? They have elders. You know, I have memories of our elders, and I will never forget. But I have memories, lots to cherish, so much. I've been to so many funerals. Yeah. There's some pictures here. Anyway, thank you all for being here.